Hello, friends. We are beginning Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries, number 9A. We're on page 1216. And we're beginning a new section, which is greatly expanded in the book Esoteric Psychology 2, where the laws of the soul are dealt with. These are called the seven laws of group work. And there they are called the laws of the soul. They're equivalent. The laws of the soul. It says here that these can only be expressed largely through the medium of mystical terms, and by that I suppose he means largely symbolic. And it is left to the intuition of the student to apply them in the more material forms of life. But later, we have actually quite detailed methods of application in the later book. You can understand the Tibetan's great work. This is one of his works, 30 years of work with Alice Bailey trying to present the outlines of the ageless wisdom, much of the teaching for the Aquarian Age, and one can only imagine what can be presented further from 2025 and onward. So we will see to what extent we can interpret these and perhaps have some reference to Esoteric Psychology 2, or at least to the memory of it. it is, I think, quite an extensive section, actually. Let's take a look here. And we'll call it Laws of the Soul. And all these laws of the soul, etc. Basic laws of the soul. Well, I think at the very beginning we don't have them exactly listed that way. But I think here some questions on service. Let's take a look here on the law of sacrifice. Maybe we can find something that way. Law of sacrifice. And there'll be a place where it does begin. Oh, well, there it is. So we're beginning here with the law of sacrifice, and it is page 87, and by the time we reach the law of the lower four, let's take a look here if we can find it. Law of the lower four. There's only two references, so we're beginning on 87, and we go to the law of the lower four. A law of expansive, so, well, over 100 pages. Over 100 pages which should be dealt with carefully and in their own right. So here it is, and then the five groups of souls. Okay. So all the way to page 199, almost to the page 200, really, from 87 to 200. But this is a much briefer treatment. And we'll lay the foundation for later work in esoteric psychology. So he makes the listing here, the law of sacrifice, and this involves the immolation, that means, you know, a self-burning, and a sixth ray method, interestingly enough, although it is a fourth ray law. The immolation and sacrifice of that which has been realized. And this is stored, in a way, in the causal body. So eventually, the causal body itself is immolated. Okay. We are told that this is crucifixion, the basic law of all group work. The law of sacrifice, the basic law of all group work, but also crucifixion, the basic law of all group work, the governing principle which results in each unit eventually becoming a savior. This is a bit like working through a treatise on white magic, in which we discover the foundational laws in a treatise on cosmic fire, and then have to go to the book itself for an expansion of those rules, the basic rules of magic. So this is a fourth ray law. It's the basic law of the entire human kingdom, and the reason for their coming forth as monads, as lords of a ceaseless persevering devotion. Fourth ray law, related, I would say, to, well, it's hard to say. You know, there is a strong Pisces quality, but this, of course, we're also going to find in the second law of service, and strong Scorpio quality. He doesn't give the actual astrological correlates all the time. Let's just see if we can see that in the law of sacrifice. Maybe he does. Sacrifice. And here it is in esoteric psychology. Not really. He doesn't really connect this with a particular sign of the zodiac, but when you think about the group of human monads and how they are ruled by Scorpio, the group of, the fourth creative hierarchy is ruled by Scorpio, and also the fourth creative hierarchy are what's called lords of ceaseless, persevering devotion. We can see that it has a scorpionic quality to it. Crucifixion is also the factor of crucifixion. We learned in the esoteric astrology book is related to Gemini. Crucifixion related to Gemini. And let's see, we can look for this either on page, let's just see, if we take the esoteric astrology book and we turn to maybe 273, possibly, or 473, it might be that. Maybe it's not going to be here. Let's try 473. Or, this is all about crisis. I think it's crisis, Gemini, and we'll see whether we have a list of these. Yes, here it is. It's a 472. I missed it by one. But the crisis of renunciation is its quality is crucifixion, and it's ruled by Gemini. So renunciation is directly connected with this law of sacrifice. This is esoteric astrology, page 472, I guess that's it. 472. So we're trying to find the astrological and planetary correlations with this law. There's a strong Plutonic energy here that leads to death and to resurrection. And I think I'll simply write that down. A strong Plutonic energy leads to death and to resurrection following crucifixion. At least that's the earliest resurrection that we have. The later one comes in the rising up to the logoic plane at the seventh degree, but we're not talking about that right now. So the third aspect of divinity will be sacrificed to the second according to this law. The law of sacrifice. Yeah, there it is. Then we have the law of magnetic impulse. This is a second ray law. It's also called the, the law of sacrifice is called the law of those, who choose to die. One can also see the sixth ray in it. But the law of magnetic impulse is called the law of polar union, and we must relate it to the second ray and to Libra. Sometimes we tend to think that Libra only brings in the third ray, but also there is divine love and understanding connected with Libra, which are definitely second-ray qualities. Here we go. Divine love and understanding. So when you think about the Spirit of Peace and Christ as the Prince of Peace, you realize the second-ray qualities of Libra. It's the sign, if we go by opposites, which stands second in relation to Aries. Aries, Libra, Taurus, Scorpio, Gemini, Sagittarius. You can find some interesting ray connections there if you take these astrological axes. All right. This law governs the primary realizations by any atom of its environing contacts and the going out or feeling after by the atom, so that eventually a relation between that which is realized as part of the group and the unit is established. And this is a relation based on love and wisdom. Contemplation is involved and is a Libran aspect of the meditative process. And it signals the identification of the meditator with that upon which he meditates. So it's the union of subject and object, and importantly, in consciousness. This is a very Libran thing, and the law of magnetic impulse or polar union is expresses this process. The law governing the primary realizations by any atom of its environing contacts, and it's a kind of fusion in the field of loving magnetism with what one contacts in the environment, the fusion within the field of loving magnetism with what one contacts in the environment, be it a person or any other object or representative of a kingdom of nature, whatever, any content of consciousness, eventually. Any contact. Content of consciousness, a going out, a feeling after. We see how the astral body is involved by that atom, so that eventually a relation between that which is realized as part of the group and the unit is established. So it this is promoting group fusion. Especially, a group fusion is the second phase. The First is individualism or individuality, then group fusion or oneness with the group. Eventually there will be contact with the universal. This is not the same as making sense contacts, as the relation establishes between the self in all and not between aspects of the not-self. So one is, is here uniting with the self, being of any object, and not with its outer characteristics. The law is sometimes called the first step towards marriage. And of course, we have to think that Libra is the sign which governs it, and Libra is essentially the sign of marriage. For it results in an eventual union between the man or atom and the group, which produces harmonious group relations. And Libra, of course, also a great sign of harmony. Libra, a sign of harmony. So, you know, the golden rule is involved here, which is so Libra, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and it is meeting the soul of another and fusing with that soul and recognizing that soul as an indissoluble part of the one soul. And many other things are said about this in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. The first steps towards marriage. We can see how important the air signs are in producing group unity. We have Gemini, brotherhood, Libra, equality and marriage, and Aquarius, liberty. Liberty, equality, fraternity. All of these so important, all of these so important in true group life, and all of them characterizing the hierarchy. The air, the Buddhic plane, the plane of air, is where these important relations are established, and the air signs are connected with the Buddhic plane. Not exclusively so, but it's there that a group union, true brotherhood, true equality, even the kind of harmonization between the human and deva kingdoms in which Libra could be said to be involved is occurring on the Buddhic plane. Really, one of the great things we need is to bring Buddhi into our monastic life. It's just like saying to learn the real meaning of love through the will to love, and then through real love to live the loving life, which of course will reveal wisdom, just the way wisdom will make possible the living of that type of loving life. They both feed upon each other or promote each other. We're getting the essences of these laws here, are we not? The law of service is here. It's also called the law of water and the fishes. And the fishes are they are souls in a way. They are units of being consciousness, who are swimming in the great waters of matter. The fishes are units of being consciousness. Right. Let's see here. So units of being consciousness swimming in the great waters, which are all levels of matter. As we know, water occultly equals matter. This law, for want of a better name, concerns the identification of an atom. He's really taking the abstract point of view here. When he starts talking about esoteric psychology, he is not using the term atom. The book Cosmic Fire is written, we're told, on the first and third ray lines, and the treatise on seven rays is written on the second ray line. So here he's giving us kind of a third ray treatment of a basically second ray approach, the laws of that second ray aspect, the soul. Fundamentally second ray aspect, regardless of what the soul ray may be. This law, for want of a better name, concerns the identification of an atom with the group interest, and the steady negation of the atom's own material interest. So it is it's a law which offsets selfishness of an individual and later even group kind, because the group will have to identify with a larger group to which, in relation to which, the group is as an individual. It really deals with the process or method whereby the atom, positive in its own centralized life, gradually becomes responsive and receptive to the positive life of the group. So the positive life of the group becomes the directing power in the life of the individual atom. And DK has said, warned us in a way of how much sacrifice of time and interest true service actually involves. So, as he talks about, you know, the fashionability of serving and how the apparently serving person really gains much more socially by serving, because the reputation increases in the eyes of society, whether or not much good is done, even the attempt will increase that reputation. But then the directing center is still the center of the atom rather than the center of the group. So the directing center becomes the center of the group rather than the center of the individual atom. So the negation of the atom's own material interest, and we can see how service and sacrifice are so allied. I mean, through sacrifice one gives up everything, but through service on the way one is giving up one's material interest. It's almost like service is allied to Aquarius and sacrifice to Pisces. Of course, with the name of a law such as the law of water and the fishes, we understand that there is a Piscean self-abnegation involved in this, but also an Aquarian outpouring. The symbol for this law will show an Aquarian outpouring, But Pisces is also involved with the relinquishment of selfish interest. Well, here we are simply receiving the epitomes of these laws. So, you know, we all have to ask, what is more important? My consuming interests or the group interests? There will always be a relinquishment of individual interests in favor of group interests. I was remembering here, and one day I'll have to find the page, where basically DK is saying that many people who are committed to fulfilling their own soul cannot be used in the process of working for the reappearance of the Christ, because they're involved in the soul expression, in sort of a individual expression or transpersonal expression. It's not the same as giving up those even rather high interests in favor of the need of the larger group, which in this case could be considered humanity, and that need involves the reappearance of the Christ, and also the need of the planet, an even larger directing need. So in this law of service, sacrifice is involved. Probably, I wonder if, in a way, I wonder if sacrifice is not a kind of common denominator in all these laws of the soul. You know, it's like the number one is divided into all other numbers. It's the only number that can be divided even into prime numbers. So it's like the law of sacrifice is the original number, which can be which has its part in and can be divided into any of the other laws. It's as if the law of sacrifice is the law from which all other soul laws are derivative, as if the law of sacrifice is the law from which all other soul laws are derived. Then these are specifically laws of the soul. Of course, I'm borrowing it away from some of the knowledge that I have from reading Esoteric Psychology 2, relating certain things. You see, the whole thing in the revelation of light is to illustrate or demonstrate relationship. When meaningful relationship is exposed, then the light flashes forth. So when all things are related to all things, there will be the great illumination of that particular whole. So my memory, as my memory serves me, I try to bring in other pieces of knowledge to which the present piece of knowledge under scrutiny is being related or can be related. And of course, when going through Esoteric Psychology 2, it would be good to come back to this book and find those kinds of relation. Now, this is called the law of repulsion, but also the law of repulse is the name which some years later the Tibetan decided to use. And nevertheless, an aspect, interestingly, of the law of love. This law concerns itself with the ability of the atom to throw off, you know, read for that Pluto or Saturn, to throw off or refuse to contact, you know, here you can read Ray 1 or Ray 1, or Ray 5 to throw off or refuse to contact any energy deemed inimical to group activity. You can understand that a higher version of this law is operative at the ninth initiation, when the high initiate refuses contact or any further contact with the cosmic physical plane, at least at that time. It is literally a law of service and of love, because somehow it advances the soul energy of that which is refused, and the soul energy of that from which an unsuitable energy is ejected. It's literally a law of service, but only comes consciously into play when the atom has established certain basic discriminations, thus Mercury and Saturn, and guides its activity through a knowledge of the laws of its own being. This is the first of the laws of the soul, which involves the spiritual triad, and requires the use of the Antikarana, as we learn later in Esoteric Psychology 2. And it's, in a way, very Scorpionic and Plutonian, I think can be safely said to be ruled by the first ray, which scatters and disperses, driving away all that violates the energy integrity of group life, driving away all that violates the energy integrity of group life. If we turn then to esoteric psychology again, and we look at the law of repulse, where it begins, the rejecting energy of the first ray. The law of service involves the energy of the sixth ray, and I think we should at least look at that. Law of service. Ah, there it is. The outpouring energy of the sixth ray, vivifying. So we should include that above. The law of service involves the outpouring energy of the sixth ray, and it is vivifying. So the first law involves the at-one-ing energy of the fourth ray. The second law, the magnetic energy of the second ray, it is the second ray. Let's see, the radiatory energy and triangle manifesting. Radiatory energy of the second ray. Radiatory energy, second ray. See, this is just not in alignment. There's really something wrong here. I wonder if I were to look at this in a smaller view, whether there would be an alignment. No, it's just as bad. So we might as well keep that nice big view. It's definitely the radiatory energy of the second ray. And then the third law, the outpouring energy of the sixth ray, vivifying. And then the fourth law, the rejecting energy of the first ray. Okay. Right. Now, it is literally a law of service, but only comes consciously into play when the atom has established certain basic discriminations, and I would say between the self and the not self, and guides its activities through a knowledge of the laws of its own being. What is being, and what is non-essential to being? What is being, and what is non-essential to being? And the same idea, what is soul, and what is non-essential to soul? Okay. This law is not the same as the law of repulsion, though it is called the law of repulse, though it is called the law of repulse, which is used in connection with the law of attraction between forms which have relation to the material. So we're not talking about harmony or similarity of forms. We are not talking about harmony or similarity of forms, which allows some to be gathered together in harmony and others to be rejected because they are not harmonious. It doesn't, but someday into the world of form that power must one day fail to penetrate. But into the world of form that power must one day fail to penetrate. So into the world of form. We are not talking about harmony or similarity of form. We are not talking about attraction or repulsion based on form at all. The laws we are now considering have relation to the psyche, to the Vishnu aspect, to the unit of consciousness on the higher mental plane, or working through the true ego or spiritual triad. One group of laws concerns energy emanating from the physical sun, and the ones we are now considering emanate from the heart of the sun, which is the soul nature of the solar logos. So these are laws which are supra-planetary. The repulsion here dealt with has the effect, when consciously applied through the developed heart energy of the human atom, for instance. That's why this is called an aspect of the law of love. Okay. Thus called an aspect of the law of love, of furthering the interests of the repulsed unit and driving it closer to its own center. So there's no animosity here, there's no criticism, no reduction. No reduction of quality for the repulsed unit. It's a bit like the angel with the flaming sword. The repulsion is in the interests of the repulsed unit, and thus the repulsion is an aspect of the law of love, or, well, what do we call it? An aspect of love. The law of love has actually a specific meaning. It's the sixth systemic law, so we don't want to get confused there. It's an aspect of love which makes it possible for the repulsed unit to progress. I mean, you know, if you were allowed into paradise and you burned up or you lost your vehicles or something dreadful happened because you were unready, would that be love just because the angel let you in? So it's looking out for the best interests of both parties. Looking out for the best interests of the group and for the unit which presently is unsuitable for the group, the best interests of both. Would it be best looking out for the best? Would it be wise for any of us to be able to walk in, waltz in to any type of initiation ceremony, say a ceremony much higher than our own state? It would not be in our favor, would it? You could say, ah, they're being kind to me, I'm being allowed into a very high initiation ceremony. But destruction of the integrity of the admitted unit would occur. So there has to be a great knowledge of psyche and of form to wield this law of repulse. There, and I'll say that, there must be a great knowledge of psyche and of form when wielding this law properly. And that knowledge comes, as we are seeing here, from the heart and soul. So it operates because of what's called above here developed heart energy. How interesting. Not the critical mind. Not the critical mind. Perhaps some idea of the great beauty of this law as it works out can be gathered from an occult phrase in a certain old book. Don't you just wonder about those old books of the wisdom to which masters like Master DK have access when the time is right and for service purposes. This repulsive force drives in seven directions. Thus we are oftentimes told, it says, the direction of ray 1, the direction of ray 2. That's how this is presented in esoteric psychology too. Let's see, the direction of ray, I guess there are seven of them. Here it is, the direction of ray 1. It drives in seven directions. The direction of ray 2, the direction of ray 3, how the repulsion is accomplished. But of course, usually what is repulsed is old habit patterns which no longer serve. So the repulsive force drives in seven directions and forces all it contacts back to the bosom of the seven spiritual fathers. Eventually, I suppose, this means the seven monads. It's interesting that as much can be accomplished through attraction as through repulsion. It is, it's kind of like a law of magnetic suitability, we might say. And magnetic suitability, but based on a knowledge of psyche. Through repulsion, the units are driven home, and the straying unconscious ones are forced towards their own center. Greatest progress occurs for the interesting straying ones, they're not where they belong, through this repulsion. So it rather sorts out appropriate psychic company. Sometimes people wander in where they are or not to be, and sometimes certain energies which they represent or energies coming in from another source try to gain entry into a group which is based upon a certain integrity. This is related a lot to Rule 9 for applicants. Only when the group is known and sensed can energy be wisely emanated. But let's look at this. Only when the group is known. Let the group know their, it's here, let the disciple merge himself within the circle of the other selves. Let the one color blend them and their unity appear. Only when the group is known and sensed can energy be wisely emanated, but let one color blend them and their unity appear. If there are coming into the group those energies which cannot be blended by the one color, then they have to be repulsed for the sake of the group and also for their own sake, because they would receive no real nourishment in an unsuitable group context. The law of repulsion, or the stream of energy for which it is but a name, can work from any center, but as dealt with here, it must emanate from the heart if it is to bring about the necessary group work. So it is not in any sense a repulsion based on criticism or on minimization. Rather, it is based on a knowledge of suitable energy contexts, we might say. Maybe some of us have experienced this at one time or another. I remember a funny kind of situation. I was really interested in studying Sanskrit when I was in college, and I found myself in some kind of advanced linguistics class where the language Sanskrit was going to be taken up, analyzed according to linguistic principles, for which I had no preparation whatsoever. It was like a 400s class. It would have required maybe 3 years of preparation before one could enter such a class. And I remember the guy, the teacher, you know, looking at me, said, "You know, I think for what you want, you're not in the right place." And of course, I really realized that that was the case. I wanted the knowledge of the language, and they were going to analyze it and compare it to other languages from the linguistic perspectives. So I was then nicely told that this was not the proper context for me. And it took many, many years later before I actually found that. But there was a repulsion going on, and it served the group, and it served me as well. I mean, it's just a small example. It has to do with, I want to say like this, contexts of soul suitability. But one color blend them and their unity appear. Only when the group is known and sensed can energy be wisely emanated. Okay. So, these are just epitomes, and of course he really develops all of these laws in esoteric psychology too, but here he seems to give some kind of essence of the law, which may not entirely be given in so succinct a form in esoteric psychology too. So really both have to be read. You know, if you want to study the seven paths on the way of higher evolution, we have to study what's in Cosmic Fire, but also in the Rays and the Initiations, both. And even maybe from Initiation Human and Solar, something of value is given on those paths. And we will at least look at them. We will study them. We will try to have them in our mind to present us with a vision of monadic destiny. That's what it's all about. When you talk about destiny, it is really of the monad, not of the personality per se. And these seven great paths are paths by means of which the monad fulfills its long-intended destiny. The fifth law is the law of group progress. It's also called the law of elevation, and ruled by that most elevatory sign, Capricorn. Not by Aquarius, as we might think, because the group does progress under Aquarius, but there is the idea of a group initiation here under Capricorn. This is sometimes called the law of elevation, for it concerns the mysteries of group realization. And in the Rays and the Initiations, it is always said, in the Rays and the Initiations, Trati. Let's see if I can. Trouble is with these italicized words, they always disappear. Okay, well, we're going to do formatted text here. Yeah, it should go, but it doesn't. So we'll forget that, and we'll try it in a different way. Formatted text, no? Okay. Well, we should. I know how to do this now. Okay, I know how to do this. So what we'll do is this way. The Rays and the Initiations, and we'll see if we can sustain this. This is a problem often. Formatted text, and we'll use T-R-A-T-I, the Rays and the Initiations. Let's see if it works. Yes, it does work for the moment, but it'll fade later probably. In the Rays Initiations, it is often said, let the group know, let the group realize. Yeah, you know, we could even turn to those particular rules. Let the group know. There's one right there, nine. Also in number six, I think, let the group know that life is one, right? And in number five, it says something similar. In unison, let the group perceive. Let the group know, realize, perceive. Any others? Let the group together move. Okay. Let the group serve. But there's much about let the group reveal. But there is much here about group perception, group realization, group knowledge, which could not be achieved unless the group were the perceiving unit. Let the group see that all 18 fires die down. All right, you get the idea. So let the group know, let the group realize, let the group perceive. No, etc. For it concerns mysteries of group realization and expansions of consciousness, and the part each unit plays in the general progress of the group. So, I don't want Trotty there, do I? No. Each unit in the group must help the group progress and must make an elevatory contribution. You know how it is, we're told if we rise, others connected with us will rise as well. And who is more connected with us than a group which is developing ashramic intimacy and right relations with each other? So if we rise, they rise. If we fall, they fall. So it has to do with expansions of consciousness and the part each unit plays in the general progress of the group. In relation to the human family, for instance, the truth is ever to be borne in mind that no human atom arrives at fullness of life. Well, he's going to say the same thing in a better way. No human atom arrives at fullness of life without adding much to the nature of his own group. And isn't this what happens on a lower turn of the spiral? Isn't this related to the progress of the members of a group soul? For instance, in the animal sense, the animal group soul. And I suppose there are, you know, there are group soul dynamics operating in the other two kingdoms as well. It's the ancient law of evil sharing must give place to the new law of ancient dominating good. And the ancient dominating good is shared. Shared with all. The second law of healing tells us so much about the sharing of group taints and sharing that which the Lord of Life, the planetary logos, say imposes upon his body. We all share that which is in the larger pool. And we're going to learn a lot about that right here on our planet with the whole ecological question that no atom lives unto itself and we are all going to be affecting each other. The elevation of a unit results in the raising of the group. And this is it not for each one of us, such a responsibility? It's not just whether we care whether we rise or fall, but by our rise or fall, we really do have a group impact. And this has to be, it's a subtle thing, and we may not see it immediately, but through our rising or falling, we have a definite DFT, no, definite, well, I might as well, group impact. Impact. The realization of the unit brings about, eventually, group recognition. And it becomes a shared realization. And the group itself realizes the responsibility of all members of it. And when the individuals are all striving to rise, certain group realizations come about with upwardly tending group members. Certain group realizations come about. The initiation of the unit leads finally to planetary initiation. And think of it, the group too is a unit. The group too is a unit, and the initiation of these groups, enough of them, will lead to planetary initiation. And the attainment of the goal by the human atom and his achievement of his objective brings about steadily and ceaselessly group achievement. So it is... It is not selfish to see to one's own proper response to initiatory opportunity. because it will have a group impact. Of course, if we become fixated on it, you know, we're told that we are to make application and forget that we have applied. And this is, you know, here, right here in Rule 2. When application has been made in triple form, let the disciple withdraw that application and forget it has been made. But we're also told that the fiery accolade of initiation does not come to the one who is over-concerned about it, nor does it come to the one who ignores the requirements. So if we conquer ourselves, which the Buddha tells us is like conquering 1,000 armies, and if we get ourselves into spiritual shape, it is all as well for the benefit of the group. No man liveth to himself, and the crucifixion of the units throughout the eons, and the realization and the realization of their essential nature, only in order to offer up the best they have and realize the best they haven't realized to the group, are but methods whereby the work of liberation is carried forward. So, crucifixion of the unit leads to group liberation eventually. And we're told, if I be lifted up, will draw all men unto me. Well, that's a to be lifted up is a kind of initiatory state, but it also suggests being lifted up onto the cross and undergoing the crucifixion. Let's just say that every crucifixion is magnetic. We might think about the initiate suffering alone and going through certain agonies, but the sacrifice has an incredible effect upon those in the immediate group, those who are related, and in the case of someone like the initiate Jesus, it had a wide-ranging effect throughout all of humanity. Any sacrifice at the fourth degree is a planetary event. Any sacrifice at the fourth degree is actually a planetary event, not just a personal event. So, you know, sometimes you've had your heart warmed when you have looked at somebody's sacrifice on behalf of someone else or on behalf of their country or a group. Sacrifice has a very heartwarming effect upon those who recognize it and inclines them to attempt to do likewise by the example set through the sacrifice. So many have followed in the footsteps of the Christ, inspired by his sacrifice, and of the Master Jesus, of course, have followed in the footsteps of the Master Jesus now, and of the Christ, inspired to do likewise. Crucifixion, I think, sets the greatest example of all, and such a compelling example that eventually it becomes inevitable. So, crucifixion, an compelling example, which guarantees inevitably crucifixion of the one who appreciates the crucifixion of another. So many, you know, I'm thinking about Father Damien. It's such an example to me, and the Tibetan does mention him in the same breath with the Master Jesus. The way he renounced his life to serve the lepers of Molokai Island in the 19th century, he was inspired by the example of Jesus and the great renunciation that the initiate Jesus made on his way to mastership. And that example for him was enough to make him give up everything. And there have been, maybe not many, but, well, there have been those who have done likewise, inspired by the great example of renunciation and crucifixion. It seems to be a method in the West, this crucifixion method. In the East, it's more the renunciation of all things. It's still a difficult life. And those in the East, they look upon the renunciants, and they seek to do likewise. The holding on, the grasping of that to which one is attracted in the lower worlds is a sign of reduced power, of incapacity, of a small scope. You know, what should it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his soul? So when the hands are filled, it's only the empty nail-marked hands which really can offer blessing to the world. If we are busy grasping for ourselves, we have not undergone the crucifixion, and we don't have hands that are free to give of the divine bounty or to be filled with the divine bounty because of the unselfish giving. Sacrifice, service, magnetism, I guess, oh, here it is. I, if I be lifted up, will draw, etc. Group progress, divine repulsion. He's putting the many themes together, you know. These are but the inadequate terms whereby we seek to express the divine truth that the whole life and expression of the Soul of Logos will only be possible in his person, only purpose only be revealed when he has brought each atomic unit to the stage of self-realization. That's the first step. Then he will lead them on to the point of sacrificing that realized self so that divine purpose and will may be consummated and the divine life and glory shine forth in perfect radiance. What a fantastic summary. You know, this is how the Tibetan manages, after laying out many important details, to wrap it all up in a great summary from the greater point of view. Sacrifice, law of sacrifice, law of service, magnetic impulse, magnetism, group progress, divine repulsion for the sake of love. These are but the inadequate terms whereby we seek to express the divine truth that the whole life expression of the Soul of Logos will only be possible and his purpose revealed when he has brought each atomic unit to the stage of self-realization. That is such an important stage, in a way, at the third degree. And then he will lead them on to the point of sacrificing that realized self. You know, think about Yogananda's group, the Self-Realization Fellowship. You can see what its goal is. There are all these different stages of self-realization, but the true secret of the soul, which one is realized at the third degree. And then he, the Soul of Logos, will lead them on to the point of sacrificing that realized self so that divine purpose and will may be consummated. I mean, it's not for nothing. It's not just because you have to suffer. It's because the magnetic example of sacrifice brings the expression of divine purpose and will ever closer and inspires other units to sacrifice likewise and thereby strengthen the intention of the Soul of Logos. Then he would lead them on to that point of sacrificing, the point of sacrificing that realized self so that divine purpose and will may be consummated and the divine life and glory shine forth in perfect radiance. All of these laws of the soul, these laws of group work lead to this consummation, which is the consummation of the one whom we live and move and have our being. The one in whom. The one in whom we live and move and have our being, or the consummation of the one in whom he lives. He or the group. Okay. Well, we... Oh, I've done it again. Oh, my. So this is the end. I'm sorry, I went on over my limit. The end of Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries, number 9A, page 1218. And beginning of Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries, 9B, page 1218. Heavens.